Thank you, Johnny. I appreciate that. A lot of helpful information, a lot of good information, and I, for one, can never recall Johnny speaking that quickly. So you packed a lot in at one time, and we appreciate that. That was helpful. If you would, as we have every week, would you join me in saying Romans 1, 16 through 17, as we prepare our hearts and minds for the Word of God this morning? Let's say it together. I am not ashamed of the gospel, because it is the power of God that brings salvation to everyone who believes. For in the gospel, the righteousness of God is revealed, a righteousness that is by faith from first to last, just as it is written, the righteous will live by faith. How many of you are familiar with the children's classic by P.D. Eastman, Are You My Mother? You know this book? A favorite around the Reynolds household for a long time. It opens with a mother bird in her nest, and the egg is about to hatch, and the mother realizes, I probably better go get some food one more time before the baby enters the world. And so she flies off, and shortly after she flies off, that egg begins to crack, and the baby comes out and starts to look around and realizes his mother is missing. And soon he falls out of the nest, down, down, down he falls, and he begins his quest. And he walks right past his mother. He doesn't see her. And maybe if he saw her, he wouldn't recognize her anyway, because he had never seen her before. And so he goes around. To everything he meets, he asks the same question. Are you my mother? Are you my mother? Are you my mother? He asks a kitten, he asks a hen, he asks a dog, he asks a cow. Are you my mother? He said to the cow. How could I be your mother? Said the cow. I am a cow. That part used to make Max howl with laughter every time. He loved that part. And it wasn't just animals either. It was inanimate objects. A boat and a plane. And the funniest part of the story, at least for 3 and 4 and 5 year olds, a snort. None of them were his mother. Eventually, he's lifted back up to his nest, and the mother is there. And the picture finally comes into view. It wasn't all those other things. He says, you are a bird, and you are my mother. Now, whether it's intended to be or not, it's a brilliant little parable about the human condition. And so much of it runs parallel to what Paul's been telling us in Romans. Sin leaves us orphaned, separated from God, searching, are you my mother? Are you my mother? Are you my father? Are you my father? And in the absence of knowing, we often look to all kinds of substitutes. As Augustine famously said, our hearts are restless until they find rest in God. And we turn to money and materialism. We bury ourselves in our careers. We escape through substances and purchases and devices. And often we find our means of escape are places eventually where we cannot escape. Paul says that's the way it can be with sin. Sin looks alluring, but it is actually imprisoning. It's something that enslaves us. And so we heard it powerfully from chapter 7 last week. We know the law is spiritual, but I am unspiritual, sold as a slave to sin, for I have the desire to do what is good, but I cannot carry it out. For I do not do the good I want to do, but the evil I do not want to do. This I keep on doing. That is our life without Christ. That is our life before Christ. But thank God the story doesn't end with what do I do and what can I not do. The question is, what does Christ do? And Jesus liberates us from the prison of sin. He says, as we die to our old life, Christ raises us with resurrection power that we can live a new life. We are set free. And this is how Paul says it at the beginning of chapter 8. Therefore, there is no condemnation for those who belong to Christ Jesus. And because you belong to Him, the power of the life-giving Spirit has freed you from the power of sin that leads to death. That's the good news that we've heard over and over and over. You do not have to be slaves to sin anymore. In fact, in chapter 6, what we heard is, now we are slaves to righteousness. Now, if we stopped there, that you don't have to be slaves to sin, now you are slaves to righteousness, that would be good news, but it's not the full good news. It would be truth, but it's not the whole picture of truth. And there is something more beautiful that follows this morning. As Christians, we are absolutely called to be slaves to righteousness. But at some point, that image, that metaphor of slave falls short. Paul knows it only tells part of the picture. Yes, we are slaves, but we are so much more. Actually, because of Christ, we are sons and daughters. We are chosen to be adopted as children into the family of God. So look at verse 14 in chapter 8 with me. For those who are led by the Spirit of God are the children of God. The Spirit you received does not make you slaves so that you live in fear again. Rather, the Spirit you received brought about your adoption to sonship and daughtership. And by Him we cry, Abba, Father. The Spirit Himself testifies with our spirit that we are God's children. Now, if we are children, then we are heirs, heirs of God and co-heirs with Christ, if indeed we share in His sufferings, in order that we may share also in His glory. That echoes what we've been hearing in the previous chapters. We're not under sin or law anymore. Now we live by the Spirit and through the Spirit, but it takes it up a notch because God's Spirit that claims us and guides us and dwells within us, God welcomes us as His family. Some of you know, some of you may not know, that my father, for his entire career, was a social worker. He worked with children's homes. And there were all kinds of kids and all kinds of stories that brought them to those children's homes. Some were orphaned. Some were unwanted. Some were wanted, but the families just weren't in a position to take care of the kids. And for many years, especially when regulations were different than they are now, about a third to a half of his job was in placement of kids and adoptions. And you may know the longer a kid lives, the older they get, the harder it is to find a place for them to stay. And so they did the best they could to provide a place for those kids. But the hope was always that they would find a place that was permanent, a family that was permanent. Because we are created for connection and community. We're created for family. I would have people, I still occasionally run into people when they realize whose son I am, will either beam with joy or tears will come to their eyes and they'll say, because of your dad, we have our son. We have our daughter. I have my brother. I have my sister. There is something really powerful in that image of adoption. Because those who are born to their parents, we know there is love there. We hope there is love there. But there is something in adoption, if you understand the story, that says you were sought out. You were chosen. You were wanted and welcomed. That's what made you family. And that's why that image of the slave, even slaves to righteousness and slaves to God, falls short ultimately, because you are a desired daughter and a sought-after son. And the same words that Jesus utters in Mark 14, 36 can rightfully roll off your tongue in prayer. Abba, Father, Daddy. No more searching. Are you my mother? Are you my mother? Are you my father? Are you my father? You found him because God found you. God sought you. God adopted you. And Paul says, you don't have to be defined by failure to sin anymore. And you don't have to be controlled by fear anymore, because you are family. We are the family of God. A messed up, imperfect family, as all families are. But you know your place. And you know your story. And the story, he says, is that we are bound for glory. The Spirit has already signed the papers and sealed the deal. And with the adoption also comes something equally exciting. We become heirs. We are recipients of a great inheritance that speaks both to God's purposes and His promises. And before I get into that, I want you to watch just a brief clip that came out in the news this last year. Let's watch this together.
Finally tonight, a big surprise for a brand many Americans love. Chobani Yogurt rose from the ground up to become a multi-billion dollar sensation. And we were there exclusively today when the CEO gave a gift that is turning employees into owners and a few future millionaires. Harry Smith asked tonight's Making a Difference.
In the modern workplace, hugging the boss may not be the first instinct of many employees.
Oh my God!
But there were hugs aplenty this morning at the Chobani Yogurt plant in upstate New York. Company founder Hamdi Ulakaya made an announcement.
We used to work together. Now we are partners.
Real partners, financial partners. Ulakaya is giving his employees a 10% stake in the company when it goes public or is sold. It's a windfall that could be worth hundreds of thousands of dollars each.
That's amazing. Amazing. Who does that?
Completely unexpected. I think that everyone is so excited.
That's two plants and more than 2,000 employees. A move more Silicon Valley than upstate New York.
Why do this? You know, it's been my dream. I'd like to get back to them and say, you and this community and this country has been so great to us, and I'd like to return that favor back to you.
The success of Chobani, a brand not 10 years old but worth billions, could only happen in America, says Ulakaya, an immigrant from Turkey who started with nothing.
You can always tell yourself that I'm going to do this, but truly believe in it is a miracle.
Maybe the miracle is that they all believed. Terry Edmonds is employee number 6.
I think about how little we started and how hard all these people worked to bring this to what we have. And I'm very proud.
The money means a lot, say these folks, but being appreciated means even more. Harry Smith, NBC News, New Berlin.
Now, I love that image for a couple of reasons. I love the generosity, But I'm also inspired by this notion of changing from employee to part owner as well, right? And imagine how that changes the mindset, or at least the potential to change the mindset. Now, you're not just working for a person, you're not just working for the company, you're working for our company. This is our business. Well, Paul says, take that image and turn it up to 10, because what Christ does is moves us from slave to sin, not only to slave to righteousness, but ultimately to sons and daughters, where we become heirs of what God is doing. That now what God has done is He not only invites us into a new life, but He invites us into a new purpose. That we get to join in the family business. That part of what we inherit, we're working for now. Now, we have this conversation from time to time with our kids. Why is it that we give our kids responsibilities and chores? Is it just so that we can have some free labor around the house? And the teens would say, well, maybe, I think so sometimes. And the parents would say, there is nothing about raising you that's free. That the labor doesn't exactly equal the cost. But there's something more going on there, right? The answer we give is because that's what it means to be a part of this family. We're all contributing to the common good of what we're up to. We're all working in the present for the future of what it means to be connected to the family life and family business. And in God's case, the family business is the love of all things. As God loved us, we love others. And as Jesus served us, we serve others. And as Jesus brings peace, we work for peace. And as the Father welcomes us, we welcome everyone. But we do it not as slaves, but as sons and daughters, as family, because that's what we do in our family. We all contribute to the family business. It is a part of our inheritance. New life after we die, yes, but new lives working toward and welcoming new creation here and now. In fact, that's one of the most beautiful images that Paul paints in chapter 8. It's God's desire to reconcile all things and the role that we get to play in that. This is a passage that I didn't understand or even wasn't even aware was there for a long time. Look at verse 19. For the creation waits in eager expectation for the children of God to be revealed. For the creation was subjected to frustration, not by its own choice, but by the will of the one who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be liberated from its bondage to decay and brought into the freedom and glory of the children of God. You hear echoes of Genesis, right? That it's not just us humans that experience the devastation of sin. The Genesis story tells us that all creation is groaning under sin's curse. What's amazing about what Paul says is that all creation has been eagerly waiting for us to be revealed, God's children to be revealed, Christ's new work for new creation to be revealed. Why? Because as God's children, we're supposed to be busy with the family business, joining God in His work at healing all things, human hearts, yes, but also relationships, and dealing with injustice and hunger, and caring for orphans and widows, and fulfilling our Genesis calling of caring for all that God has made. We are the new Israel. Israel's inheritance was the promised land. But as people connected to new creation, we join in the healing of all the land all the people, all that God has made. That is the big purpose. That is the family business. Now here's the promise. And we already heard it. As Jesus was raised, we will be raised to new life. And not just someday, but every day, we are being transformed a little more to look like Jesus until the job is complete, until the glory comes. And we're going to have trouble along the way, Paul warns us. And sometimes, just as all creation is groaning for the work of God to be complete, we too will groan. We too will cry out in the frustration that the work isn't done yet. And so there's one more promise I want to leave you with, and this is beautiful and wonderful news. Even those groans of ours are heard. When we talk with God, when we pray to God, we don't always know what to say or how to say it. And often I think the more clever we try to get in our prayer, the more convoluted our prayers can become sometimes. But Paul says, don't worry if you don't always know what to say or how to say it, because we have the Spirit that makes us sons and daughters. Look at verse 26. In the same way, the Spirit helps us in our weakness. We don't know what we ought to pray for, but the Spirit Himself intercedes for us through wordless groans. And so He who searches our hearts knows the mind of the Spirit, because the Spirit intercedes for God's people in accordance with the will of God. The Spirit understands. The Spirit translates. The deep places of our hearts cry out to the depths of God's heart. That's how you talk when you're family. We're going to close with a family time of prayer this morning over one of our own, several of our own, a time of lifting up. And I'll be honest, there are plenty of times in prayer when words fail me. But here's what I trust, and here's what I hope, that God's Spirit is working in us and through us. That it is not that we land on all the right words, it's that we look to the right place, the God who knows the depths of our hearts. So let's stand and sing together, and then we'll have a time of prayer.